You're listening to the Stain and Seal Experts Podcast, where you'll get educated, get more money, grow your business, and kick the 9-to-5. Here is your host, an entrepreneur and mastermind behind the Stain and Seal Experts brand, Caleb Roth.
Good morning, everybody. If you're looking to start or grow your wood staining business, you're at the right place. With us, you get access to the biggest community of experts in the industry, and Expert Stain and Seal, number one stain brand for professional wood care contractors. So please check us out at expertwoodcare.com. Today is Saturday, August 20th, 2022. Hey, we had a great week this week. Stain service is picking up now that the kids are back in school. And we're seeing things trending upward quite a bit across the board. More sales of stain, more contractors buying stain, more service jobs coming in. So we're hearing big things there. That's awesome that everybody's staying busy. And the Huge Convention was this week. So the Huge Convention was in Nashville this year, and we just finished up the show last night, actually. Lots of really cool equipment on display. Had a ton of visitors at our booth. If you came and saw us, I want to thank everybody who did come by to see us. It was a really good show. Actually, better show than I thought. So very excited about that one. That was a great show. So I want to say good morning to everybody. Looks like we got some viewers on this morning. Chris from Kasurik Distributors. That is the expert stain and seal distributor up in the Northeast, based in PA. So good morning, Chris. Justin Menendez says good morning from Plattsmouth. Making all things new. Everybody knows Justin. And Dylan from the Fence King is awake. He said, you know, I might sleep in this, you know, I get up at 5 during the week. But on the weekends, I like to sleep in a little bit. Looks like he made it. So 9 o'clock's not too bad, right? So glad you could be here this morning. So I've got a new section of the show. It's called the Wood Talk section. And today's wood species is poplar. We're going to talk about poplar today. So poplar, or tulip poplar, yellow poplar, whatever you might call it, it's the populus tree, P-O-P-U-L-U-S, which is the genus, the plant genome or whatever, and it includes most poplars. And I'm reading from my notes here, so just so you know. Not only are poplars populous, but also aspen and cottonwood trees. So among, you know, poplar is among the most economical and inexpensive of all domestic hardwoods. Poplar is generally affordably priced, especially in the eastern United States where it grows naturally. I've also heard it called the poor man's hardwood. So poplar is a commonly used lumber for four-rail fencing, log homes, barn siding, and sometimes cabin siding. So in Tennessee, poplar is a Tennessee state tree, I do believe. We see it on probably 5% of four rail fences. You will see poplar. And you also have log homes. We do see a lot of log homes. So the actual logs themselves are poplar. We see a ton of poplar on barn siding. So you see these tobacco barns and things like that. We do see that quite a bit. And I'm going to show you a poplar fence. Here I'm going to do a quick search board and show you what a poplar fence looks like, because poplar looks a little bit different. It is generally can be mistaken for cedar. So we will show you what that looks like in just a moment. Let's see here. Let's see who Hamilton Fence is. See if these guys have got a good website. Looks like they've got some poplar. Yep. We're going to show Hamilton Fence Company. From Ohio. So don't know who you are, but good morning and you're on the show. So check this out. I will show you guys what poplar looks like, because sometimes it's got a real yellow color, and other times it has more of a pinkish color. So here is what poplar looks like. Here's Hamilton Fence. They've got a couple photos. Right there is one. Let's click on this one. There is a great demonstration of what poplar looks like. You notice it's got a nice pink color. Looks kind of like cedar from a distance, but the grain structure is way different. It's usually less knots, a much tighter, more of a fibrous grain, and very pink, very uniform. But over here, you got a really light yellow colored board. So that is poplar. It's kind of, it's all over the place. It turns colors in the sun quickly. So this fence was built in pink like this. Probably in just a few days, it already started to turn more of a blonde yellow color. So pretty neat there. That is poplar. I personally really like poplar. I like to stain poplar. And I'm going to tell you a story. So right now, we're currently restoring a poplar log home in Nashville. You may have seen some of the social media posts we've been doing about it. And it reminded me of a lesson that I learned long ago about poplar. And that's why poplar is today's wood talk section. So back in 2012, we stained our first poplar four rail fence, and it was a big one. It was a big fence. We used, at that time, we used Wood Defender coffee brown stain. The job called for about 30 buckets of stain. It was a big job for us back then. And our crew stained the job. They did a beautiful job. It was, they did a fantastic job. And when they came back, they had 15 buckets of stain left over. And they bragged, hey, you know, we did a great job. It looks perfect. And we've got 15 buckets of stain left over. And looking at the job site, it was perfect. It was beautiful. You could not argue with the crew. They did a phenomenal job. We were so excited also because we had 15 buckets of stain left over, and that was a huge profit. That was way more value in the stain we had left over than the actual profit we made on the job. So really excited about that. And then about 6 months went by, and we got a call from the customer that there was a problem. So when we got on site, the fence looked like it was stained about 15 years ago. It looked really bad. And we had to, we really didn't know why, but we remembered that, you know, hey, we only used half as much stain as we thought we were going to on this, but it looked beautiful. I couldn't understand, you know. And long story short, we had to restain the fence as a warranty for this customer. And what we learned after doing a little research about poplar and paying attention is that poplar is actually a hardwood, also known as the poor man's hardwood, right? And it's very, very tight grained. The grain structure on cedar or on pine is very open. You see the big grain marks. With poplar, it's so tight. It's a very tight grain. And what would happen is if you stained poplar, if you stained a cedar or pine fence and you spray a board, you may have to pass over that board with a really heavy flood coat, or maybe two or three passes on a four rail fence, maybe four passes to really get the stain to soak in the proper amount to get full saturation. Well, with poplar, you spray across the board one time and the grain is so tight that the stain does not sink in quickly. So it looks like this fence is stained perfectly. It looks like you put enough stain on there because all that color is sitting on the surface. So it creates an illusion. And so the moral of the story with poplar is, in our experience, it's best to never skimp on stain when you're doing poplar, even if you think you've put enough on there. If you think it's going to use 10 gallons and you've used 6, you better go back and put a second coat on there. So with poplar, best practices from our experience is do a coat and then come back and do a second coat, wet on wet. You don't have to wait 24 hours or anything. Just spray it and then come. If you go down a fence line spraying it, walk back and spray it again. And just make sure you do an extra good job with poplar to get enough stain on the wood so that you don't have to worry about coming back in 6 months and doing it over again. So, and that poplar is one of the only woods that I really recommend that two coat system on, with Expert Stain and Seal or other penetrating oil based stains. So I wanted to take some comments, again, and just say hello to everyone. I see somebody else here that says, "What's up, guys?" Don't know who you are. If you're on Facebook, we can't see the comments. So, or we can't see your name. So please put your name in the comments. Today's lesson or show is about, I'm going to take myself off this. All right. Someone said they couldn't hear me, so I'm back. But it says, got a couple comments here from Stanton Frank. Good morning. Can't wait to see, can't wait for the cabin in a week. Can't wait to see it. So good morning, Stanton. Can't wait for that. Braden Powell, Caleb, hope you're doing well. Thanks, Braden, for stopping by. Good morning. Let's see. What's up, guys? It's Tim Cox from Augusta, Georgia. Good morning. And somebody said, can't hear the podcast since you switched screens. Thanks for letting me know. I appreciate that. Braden Powell, good morning again. And Justin. Well, I switched screens. I was trying to show you guys the dog. So who can guess what buy a used dog means? You know, I want to take it in the comments because that's what today's show is all about, is buying a used dog. And I'm wondering, I bet everybody's wondering what in the world does buy a used dog have to do with anything? And why would you buy a used dog and not a new dog? So let's dig in. So farmers are the backbone of our country, right? And they gain a great deal of wisdom from working with livestock, from working with people, the land, you name it. So most of us have probably met a farmer in our life and, you know, has thought, man, that guy knows something. So I'm going to tell a story about a lesson that I learned about business on the farm by a used dog. So several years ago, my wife and I decided to start a sheep farm. We had some land and we wanted to grow our herd of sheep to 100 head of sheep as quickly as possible. You know, I like to do everything big, right? So in Tennessee, we've got coyotes, bobcats, you get the occasional bear, but usually somebody shoots it pretty fast because we live in the country with a bunch of rednecks. And occasionally you hear about a mountain lion and we got a lot of stray dogs. So if you're going to have sheep, you got to have a good sheepdog, right? And a sheepdog basically is the dog that lays in the field. He also looks like a sheep. He's a big white dog usually. And his job is to kill anything that messes with the sheep. You know, if a coyote or a bear or whatever comes around, he's going to fight it, run it away or sacrifice himself. He's also going to eat afterbirth. If a lamb is born, there's afterbirth there that could attract vultures, buzzards, coyotes, or predators. And so his job is to eat that so it doesn't attract anything. His job's also to move the sheep. If he feels like they're threatened, they will move the sheep to another area and patrol, mark territory, you know, and just be a good protector or guardian of his flock. And so we did what any good farmer would do. We found like a really highly recommended person who breeds sheepdogs. And we went there and it just so happened that they had a litter of puppies right now. And so we got a $100 sheepdog puppy and that was a Great Pyrenees. We raised him up. We got a male. He was a very handsome Great Pyrenees. His name was Leo. I remember he was such a stud. He was the most good, like he was the, you know, just the epitome of what a sheepdog should look like. I remember being so proud of how handsome he was. He just really a good looking dog. And when he turned about a year old, we started finding lambs that had their ears messed up. The tops of their ears were messed up and we couldn't figure out what was going on. Dog wasn't doing it. I mean, we never saw the dog doing anything. And then the ears kept getting worse. And we thought, man, what's going on here? And then we started finding lambs that were skinned. You know, they would have skin missing off of them in places. And I thought, man, this is so strange. And so I would sit up at night and watch and wait. And of course my dog was barking at things. And I thought, man, you know, we had a big property. So if the dog was in one area, you know, patrolling or whatever, maybe something could come get a mess with a lamb while he was out. And, then we started finding dead lambs and most of them were skinned, like half skinned or partially skinned and, could not figure it out. And, was just really waiting on our dog to get grown so he'd be maybe a little better protector for him. And this went on for quite some while, and we could not figure out what was happening. And so one night, it was cold. It was wintertime. there was a, we had a big bale of hay, and I saw my dog. I looked out and he was right in front of a dog, and he was doing something. He was eating something. And I couldn't figure out what in the world it was. And I thought he had caught something, you know, he caught a squirrel or whatever. So I walk out there, and he kind of walks away as I walk out there, and I go and I look down at what he was chewing on. And it was a baby lamb about this big. It was as small as a small kitten. And it was the most beautiful lamb you had ever seen. It was just white as snow, perfect, beautiful, laying there, just quiet, just perfectly quiet, and just the happiest thing. But there was a problem. From the middle of his back all the way down, he was completely skinned. He had all of his skin removed. And it was a horrendous sight to see. And when I walked over, and that little lamb was laying down just trying to stay warm, and when I walked over, he opened his eyes and he popped his head up, and he was completely alert. He was this perfect lamb who was doomed, right? So the lamb was certainly going to die. And that was when I knew I had a bad dog. I had a dog that had learned to play with the lambs at first with their ears. We'll play with them because they're fun and he's a puppy. And then he found out that they tasted pretty good. And he wasn't mean, but he was the guy who was chewing up and killing our lambs. So our highly recommended sheepdog was a sheep killer. And I guess most of you guys know you can't give away a dog to someone else who kills things. So what do you do, right? So, and then that was bad, you know, it was very disappointing. And then, so we went through a few more puppies, you know, trying to raise a puppy because we thought we had to raise a puppy and they have instinct. So went through more puppies and young dogs and had the same problem over and over and over. And these are $100 dogs, right? The money was not important as the time was, because it takes a long time to go from puppy to full grown working dog, right? So finally, one day we got lucky. And this couple from Indiana or Illinois, maybe they were called, their last name was Higginbottom, very unique name. They had a sheepdog for sale for $1,000, and her name was Ellie. Well, they were moving. They sold their farm and they were going to the beach. They were moving to the beach and they got rid of all their sheep, and they had Ellie left. And Ellie was a seasoned professional sheepdog. She was probably 5 years old at the time. They wanted $1,000 for Ellie, and I thought they were crazy. But I was losing between coyotes and predators and bad dogs. I was losing a lot more than that, and just profits from sheep. And not to mention profits, I mean, I couldn't grow my sheep herd. My lambs kept dying. So I thought the price was high, but we bought Ellie. We drove, you know, a couple towns over and met the people on the way to the beach with Ellie at a Cracker Barrel in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. We picked up Ellie, and as soon as we brought her to our farm, she went to work immediately. The first thing she did was she found the fence and she walked the border just with her nose down, sniffed. She found the perimeter and she started patrolling. She started watching the sheep. She would lay near the sheep all the time. She would never wander off. When a ewe would have a baby, when they would have a lamb, she would be there licking the back end of the mom to clean her off, cleaning the lamb up, licking the lamb, making sure the lamb was up and moving and clean. And then she would eat the afterbirth. She would keep other sheep away from the baby. And, that was pretty cool. And our farm began to flourish. At night, she would patrol, you know, it was just really cool. And so buying a used dog really changed our operation. It was really what we needed. We didn't think we could afford it, and we didn't want to pay the money for the used dog, but the used dog was really what we needed all along. And looking back, the used dog was quite a bit cheaper than buying the cheap dogs, right? So the moral of the story is, when I first started in business, we could hire team members, or we would hire team members that we thought we could afford, who had no experience or very little experience. And we would spend a lot of time and resources to try to build that person up. And most of the time we would just have to part ways later because it wouldn't work. It didn't work out. So now I understand that all of our best hires in our business scare me, because I'm afraid that maybe it's going to hurt a little bit to pay them what they are worth, because a used dog costs a lot more money than a new dog, right? But a used dog gets stuff done. They've been there before. They've got experience. They know exactly what to do. And a used dog can train a puppy. So when we got another puppy, our used dog trained that puppy. Turned out to be a phenomenal team together, because she taught him what to do and how to be a professional dog. So as we move forward in our company, we're looking for people who have been there. They know what to do. They've done it in a similar business, or not even close to being a similar business, but they've been here before in a different type of environment. And they've got the experience that we need to take us to the next level. And it costs more money in your mind up front, but actually it saves you so much time and so much money moving forward. So sometimes you've just got to buy a used dog. So there's my story. That is what buy a used dog's all about. Hopefully that made sense. And maybe somebody who watching this or listening to this needed to hear that story. Sometimes you just got to buy a used dog, guys. Nothing wrong with that. It's supposed to be scary. All of our best hires made me nervous, scared me. I was afraid I couldn't afford them. I don't like to say I can't afford it anymore, because I think it's a bad mindset, but buy a used dog, pay the price, and many times it will pay dividends, not only for you, but for all of your people and your team. So Tim Cox says, not always buying the best new stuff. Close, but not quite right. Buy old stain. Nope. Eric Land from Royalty Deck Restoration. Good morning. G.L. Brown says, Australia makes deck oil out of sheep fleece. Never heard of that. That's interesting. Lene Benjamin, hope I got that right, in Daytona Beach. Vincent, my man Vincent, probably the best looking guy in the staining business. He has the Texas version of Fabio, dark long hair. So good morning, Vincent. Walt Dennis, good morning. Spent some time with Walt down in Dallas the other day. Dallas is booming. It's insane. Never seen anything like it. So if you don't know what Dallas is like, you should get down to Dallas. Speaking of Dallas, there's an event September 13th and 14th in Dallas. Let me get the link here and drop it in the notes for you guys. It's the WashMart event. We're going to be there. And it's a Staining University event that's tied in with a power washing event there in Dallas. So come and see us. It's Dallas-Fort Worth area. Those that know Marco over at WashMart, that is the folks, really nice people, and they're putting that event on. It's a free event, so you can sign up, and here is the link right there in the notes or the comments. Also, speaking of events, we got Staining University in Springfield, Missouri coming up. That's at Joe Evers's place, Ozark Fence, November 10th and 11th. It's going to be fun. It's going to be that's going to be a really good one. So appreciate it if you guys would come out. Also, in the books, as certainly going to happen, but not yet planned out, so we don't have dates, but we are going to go to Southern California and do an event right outside of LA, right on the beach, and also in Wilmington, North Carolina. So complete opposite ends of the country. So if you're on the West Coast or the East Coast, we got you covered, and that will be in the next 6 months. Not sure when, but it will be in the next 6 months. Got a few more folks coming in here this morning. Josh with Precision Staining out of Orlando, Florida. That's a cool name, and I like it. I do want to take questions this morning, but I've got a couple of questions that people already asked, and I'm going to drop them right there on the screen. And let's talk about this. So when quoting a fence in a subdivision, how do you handle the neighbors who share the fence? Do you offer to do their side as well, or do you just let them know you'll be working on the other side? So there's a couple different scenarios here. Whose fence is it? Do they share the fence? Is this fence literally built on the property line? Or is this fence just slightly inside one side or the other? So you got to determine whose fence it is. If it is my fence completely, I'm going to stay in both sides of it. And most states have laws for you to be able to maintenance your property. So sometimes to maintenance your property, you have to go on your neighbor's property to do it. So generally, as long as you are within reason, you can go on the neighbor's property to stain or build your fence. Even if it's all the way on your side, you can still go to the neighbor's yard to stain it. So generally, we just encourage folks to, hey, you really need to stain both sides of this fence to preserve it. Why would you brush your top teeth and not your bottom teeth? So take care of it and do both sides. We also will let them know that if you stain one side of the fence, chances are oil is going to penetrate through the fence and you're going to see it on the other side between the boards, between, you know, in the knot holes and things like that. So you got to be aware of that. And worst case scenario, if the neighbors only want to do one side and not the other, you just got to let them know about that. The penetration is going to be visible. And if you're doing two sides of the fence, a different color, each side a different color, you want to do the light color first with a nice heavy flood coat. And then the dark color, I would recommend you do a couple of light coats to get it, because you don't want the dark color to penetrate through the knot holes on the light colored side. So I hope that's helpful. When starting out staining and sealing, what do I charge? How do I figure out what to charge for services? I'm going to point you over to another video we did called Staining Fences, or How to Bid Fence Staining, How to Bid Deck Staining, in our YouTube channel. So if you're watching this on YouTube, go through our videos. We've got some webinars recorded that go all over staining and sealing services. Thank you. And got my coffee delivered. That was nice. And want you to go in there and watch those webinars. But essentially, the best way to start out charging, in my opinion, is to discover your cost to do business. What is your cost to do to produce this job? And that is generally labor and materials. And I also like to personally figure in fuel for mileage. So because you cannot produce a job without driving and burning fuel to get to the job. So what is the cost to do the job? And labor, a lot of guys don't want to charge labor because they say, well, I'm doing it. You have to charge labor or you will never be able to later charge labor. So you need to charge labor. So what would it cost you to do the job if you had to pay crew to do it for you? What are the materials? What are the fuel? It's generally your cost of goods sold is what that number is. You have to find what your cost of goods sold is. And then you decide a margin. Tom Reber from the Contractor Fight recommends a minimum of a 50% gross profit margin. And so a quick way to get a 50% gross profit margin is take your cost of goods sold, your labor, material, and double it. And that would give you a 50% gross profit margin. That 50% goes to pay all your overhead. It goes to pay insurance, someone who answers the phone for upgraded equipment. And then hopefully there is a profit, a net profit left over when you're done. So, but check out the webinar and it goes deep into that. But you got to understand your cost before you can understand what to charge. So many people just throw numbers out and do not understand what their actual cost is. So be mindful of that. Al Martins from Fence Armor up in Canada. Good morning. Glad you are here. I miss you a lot. Wish I could see you. Our border is not what it used to be. So going back and forth over the last couple of years has been different. So can't wait to see you again, Al. If you don't know Fence Armor, I want you guys to go to fencearmor.com and check them out. Fence Armor protects your customer's property, and you can earn extra income by installing that for people. The problem is they don't understand they need it. So it is your duty and responsibility to let them know, hey, there's a problem here. Here's how you fix it. We've got the solution. Everyone's seen a fence post and everybody's seen a weed eater, right? The two don't mix. So when you do a really good job weed eating around your fence, unfortunately, you destroy the bottom of your fence. And everybody's seen a fence post that's been chewed in half by a weed eater. And Fence Armor is a piece of steel that goes right over the post right there. It's beautiful. It's elegant. It looks nice. You can't even notice it until you're looking for it. But it protects against that weed eater damage. They cost a very reasonable small price each. You can put them on in just a few minutes. And most people, especially HOAs and large communities, understand the cost associated with damaged fence posts and what that looks like long term. And so they're definitely willing to make that investment to put Fence Armor on all the bottom of their fence posts. So we recommend stain and seal the fence and then put Fence Armor on right after. And you've got a winning combination. Justin Menendez been asked by a sheriff to leave a neighbor's property. Be respectful, Justin. Yeah, that happens sometimes. And unfortunately, many times the sheriff's departments, they don't know the law, the right to maintain your property law. And so it's a good idea to look that up for your state. So if you do run into that issue, you have the law there asking you to leave. You could say very respectfully, there is a law in the state of Tennessee or wherever that says we can maintain the property within reason. Here's the law. Can you stay with us while we stain this left side of the fence? It'll take us about 10 minutes. Can we do that? Is that reasonable? And usually law enforcement will say yes. You and your team are awesome. Thanks for everything you do for the professional wood care industry. Thank you very much. Not sure who that is, but man, we really appreciate you. Al Martin's looks like he's wanting to come to Tennessee. It's been too long, right? So also, can we mention Turkeys for Soldiers and that we're making a huge difference this year, Justin? So Justin started giving turkeys to soldiers on Thanksgiving. And a couple years ago, our staining group joined in. And Justin, tell me how many turkeys we gave away last year. How many families got a turkey? And these aren't, you know, some of these families don't need the turkey, but they are serving the country. Some of the families really, they're not going to have turkey for Thanksgiving unless it comes from us. So Justin says gave out 300 turkeys last year. So that was cool. And we were planning it again this year. And, I decided that we were thinking too small. You know, maybe we can do 500 turkeys this year, 1,000 turkeys, right? I think we should do 1,000,000 turkeys, or maybe 1,000,000 T-bones or something. But I do think we could take the 300 turkeys and turn it into 1,000,000 families. So we're going to do that again this year. And over the next few years, that's going to become a really humongous, probably some type of a foundation to feed soldiers, because they are the front line. And we appreciate them, right? So, Justin, is there a link? Is there a way? How do we buy a turkey and get it to you? Justin's actually reaching out to the turkey, like the National Turkey Association, to see if they're willing to help too. But we are going to raise a lot of turkeys this year. So he did. So yeah, 300 turkeys for Thanksgiving and 100 for Christmas last year. So our goal this year is 1,000,000 turkeys. So Justin, let us know in the Staining University group how we can be a part of that. And if you want to help get a turkey to a family this year who needs it, I'm asking you to please help us out with that. All right, guys. Justin, drop that link. And if you don't have time to get the link, then put it in Staining University, and we'll make sure and we'll share this more as the year goes on. Please check out expertwoodcare.com. that's a place you can send your customers that want to see stain colors. Great website there. Expert Wood Care talks all about our products we make. And if you're local, go to stainandsealexperts.com. Nashville service business. We stain and seal fences, decks, cabins, you name it. We are the professional wood care contractor in our area, and would love to work with you on your project. You can also find Expert Stain and Seal in retailers all across the U.S. and Canada, both brick and mortar and online. You got fencearmor.com. You can get stain there. You've got Kasurik Distributors, who's probably still watching. They've got a whole list of dealers in their region. And you got Ozark Fence. You can get it there at, what is it, ozarkfence.com, and click on their store. You can get it at the Stain and Seal Experts store. Staindepot.com, the Stain Depot, you can get it. It's even on Amazon. And if you guys are watching this, listening to this, please go on Amazon and search Expert Stain and Seal. Find it and give it a review. We would love to get that 5-star review from you and bonus points for pictures. If you're watching this on YouTube, there's about an 80% chance that you have not subscribed to our channel. So I'm asking you right now, please subscribe to our channel, and please check us out. Subscribe and share this with your friends. If you're listening on iTunes or other places, we ask you also, please leave us a review. And I want to talk for a minute about Staining University and being a part of a community that cares about the industry. So if you join Staining University, you are a part of the biggest wood care community in the universe. We checked. It's the biggest one. And if you're looking to start or grow your wood staining business, you want to do sealing, you're at the right place, right? So with us, you get access to the biggest community of experts in the industry. And this is people that use every kind of stain. They've been in every kind of pickle. They've done every kind of wood care job you can imagine. And they've got experience, and they're willing to share it. They're willing to share it. So if you've got a problem, if you've got a question, if you just want to learn and just browse, go to Staining University on Facebook and join that community. And there's no knuckleheads there. We don't allow knuckleheads. So if you are a knucklehead, do not apply. There's no foul language. There's no shenanigans there. It is a professional place that you could bring your children and be confident that they're not going to see something that you wouldn't want them to see. So join Staining University. Check that out. Now, somebody's asking about log and timber oil. And let's talk about that. Okay, Stanton. I would like Stanton to come on and talk about our log and timber oil personally. But log and timber oil. So most of you guys know us for our Expert Stain and Seal, which is the stain that we've been known for. We decided quite some time ago that if we no longer had the confines of money or market price, if we weren't worried about price, how would we build a stain? What would we do? And so we did that. And our log and timber oil is a generally a dual dispersion stain. So instead of one type of color, we generally have a couple types of pigments in there. Usually we blend opaque and transparent pigments in these formulas. So you kind of get the best of both worlds there. Everything's semi-transparent, but you get different pigmentation, which is going to give you a longer life. And we also have citronella oil in there. Citronella oil is in the stain for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's in there to prevent boring insects, boring bees from going and drilling holes in your house, in your logs, in your timber, and destroying your property. When you have boring insects in your home, woodpeckers like to eat them. So they come along. So not only does the bug destroy your home, Mr. Woodpecker is pecking on the side of your house because, hey, there's a snack in there and I'm going to get it out. So also we might say that it prevents woodpeckers, but also citronella oil is one of the most powerful mildewicide, fungicides, anti-mold things in nature. So it's really double duty there, is to prevent mold, mildew, and things like that. So that's an extra bonus. So Just a really good product, and we recommend it for log homes. You can put it on fences, decks, cabins, whatever you want, and it's just a really great product. It does cost more money than many products. It's in the log cabin industry, so check that out. If you want a phenomenal product, check out Expert Log and Timber Oil. All right, guys. Follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you get your videos or podcasts. Please do that for us. We would really appreciate it. We will see you guys next week. Thank you so much for joining the show. And remember, when it comes to your exterior wood, it's not done until it's finished. Have a great weekend, guys. We'll see you next time.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We love sharing our information that we've learned over the years here at Stain and Seal Experts. Being a stain and seal contractor, we've got to have products we can count on. And that's why we only use Expert professional wood care products. Expert Stain and Seal and Expert cleaners and brighteners really make our job easy. It's something we can depend on. The number one reason for callbacks in wood fencing nowadays is because of warping, twisting, and cracking. And this oil-based formula stops that. And besides that, it's so easy to apply. Any of our guys can do it. And it's just been really a great thing for our company. So check it out. You can get it at the Stain and Seal Experts store, stainandsealexperts.com. And there's tons of dealers all over the U.S. and Canada that carry it. Maybe you should talk to your fence supply house, your paint supplier, or power wash store about Expert Stain and Seal.
Thank you for listening to the Stain and Seal Experts podcast. Subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and check out Stain and Seal Experts on your favorite social media.